Hello and welcome to Pets Plus Us, a weekly program of information and stories about the companions in our lives, our pets. I'm Mary DeFranco, your host for Pets Plus Us. Coming up this half hour, allergic to pets? What causes allergies to pets? Are you allergic? And if you are, can you still have a pet? From Animal Planet. Are pet allergies the same as outdoor allergies? Every spring, meteorologists start to weave pollen reports into their regular forecasts, but who is it that needs to be paying attention? According to the Asthma and Allergy Foundation of America, or AAFA, in the United States alone, 60 million people are affected by allergies. Among other things, this figure encompasses both pet allergies, a type of indoor allergy, and outdoor allergies. But how much do these two types of allergies actually have in common? Pet allergies and outdoor allergies are alike in some ways. They are very similar in how they make their way into the body, what symptoms they cause, and how you treat them, but they're not one and the same. Here's a look at what sets them apart. Allergy origins. Before you start comparing types of allergies, it helps to know a little bit about them. The term allergy refers to a disease that affects the immune system and is caused by a reaction to a substance known as an allergen. In general, different allergens trigger different kinds of allergies, and contrasting pet allergies with outdoor allergies provides a good example of that. Pet allergies are reactions to allergens that come from your pet's saliva, urine, or skin secretions and end up drying on their skin or fur, and shedding off as dander. When these dander flakes become airborne, they get stuck to just about everything they come in contact with, including people and objects such as furniture and carpets. Since dander tends to affect most people when it sets up shop in a home, pet allergies are considered to be an indoor allergy. Outdoor allergies, on the other hand, are set off by allergens produced by a number of potential sources, including trees, grass, or weed pollen. The notorious variety of pollen, which causes so much trouble for the outdoor allergy prone, usually comes from plants, trees, or grass, and is dispersed by way of the wind. There is a more fragrant type of pollen, which gives flowers their sweet scent and makes its way from one source to another by hitching rides with bees or other insects, but this kind of pollen is rarely the cause of allergic reactions. So, pet and outdoor allergens are distinct, but what they do have in common is how they make their way into folks' bodies. They're inhaled through the nose and mouth, unlike insect allergens, for example, which enter the body by way of injection through a bug's stinger. Either way, the resulting allergic reaction is decidedly unfun. Action-reaction. One important thing worth noting is that people who already have one type of allergy are prone to developing others. So there is a chance that you could be allergic to more than one kind of allergen. In those cases, the lines between pet allergies and outdoor allergies can get kind of blurry. You're likely to see some overlap, for example, when it comes to symptoms. With either of these types of allergies, you could have inflamed or watery eyes, a stuffy nose, sneezing, coughing, difficulty breathing, and in extreme cases, full-blown asthma attacks. There are, however, a few unique points. Those with a pet allergy can also have skin reactions if a dog or cat scratches or licks them. And people who have pollen-based allergies may be more likely to exhibit dark circles under their eyes. Regardless of what symptoms you have, it's best not to diagnose yourself. Consider seeing an allergist to help pinpoint the exact source of your allergic reactions. From there, your doctor can advise you on the best steps to take to fight your allergies and feel better. Those who have pet allergies, for example, often find that it helps to avoid direct contact with animals. When that's not possible, there are also a number of over-the-counter and prescription remedies available to help alleviate pet allergy symptoms, including oral medications, sprays, eye drops, inhalers, and even injections. Of course, there's really no way to avoid coming into contact with a source of outdoor allergies, but the solutions for treating them are often similar to those used with pet allergies. And that's pretty much the final verdict on the relationship between these two. While pet and outdoor allergies are not identical twins per se, you can think of them as close relatives with their own special quirks. Quirks that you'd rather appreciate from a distance. Also from Animal Planet, hypoallergenic pets. Or are they? If just the sight of a cat or dog seems to make you wheeze, sneeze, or break out in a rash, rest assured you're not alone. According to the Asthma and Allergy Foundation of America, one out of every four people struggles with allergies and asthma on a regular basis. And 15 to 30% of those cases are dog or cat related. For the animal lovers who fall into this category, the idea of hypoallergenic pets probably sounds like a dream come true. But is there really any truth to it? There are certainly many cats and dogs marketed as hypoallergenic to the extent that the concept has become the subject of national headlines by way of U.S. President Barack Obama's highly publicized search for a family dog, for example. Certain companies even claim that they have created hypoallergenic pet breeds through selective breeding, and they attach a hefty price tag to them as well. Just one of these pets goes for anywhere from thousands to tens of thousands of dollars. Some doctors, however, argue the validity of these companies' methods, maintaining the only way to create a truly hypoallergenic cat would be by eliminating the feline protein that sets off the allergic reaction. The hypoallergenic label is usually associated with breeds that tend to shed less or hardly at all, which in theory sounds right, right? Sure, if the actual culprit behind the allergies was pet's fur. In reality, for dogs, the guilty party is a secretions transmitted through their skin glands that keeps their fur nice and smooth. With cats, allergens are in their saliva and get transferred to the fur by the tongue through licking and grooming. In both cases, when the animals shed dead skin cells, known as dander, the allergens become the core part of it. While particles of this dander may rest in the fur, the allergen itself does not actually originate within the hair follicles. So, unless someone genetically engineers an animal with allergen-free saliva and secretions, the concept of getting a truly 100% hypoallergenic pet will continue to be nothing more than a nice idea. However, allergic reactions may be minimized somewhat with dogs that shed less because they theoretically release less dander into the air. Here are a few breeds that fall into that category, according to the American Kennel Club, or AKC. The Bedlington Terrier, the Bichon Frise, the Chinese Crested, the Irish Water Spaniel, the Terrier, Maltese, Poodle, Portuguese Water Dog, the Schnauzer, including miniature, standard, or giant, soft-coated Wheaton Terrier, and the Mexican Hairless. With cats, it's a little trickier since the allergen is transmitted through their saliva and their shedding patterns, and hair length don't necessarily dictate or diminish the frequency of their personal grooming. However, there are some breeds that produce less of the allergy-inducing FELD1 protein, such as the Balinese, or those with shorter or less fur, such as the Devon Rex, that may prove to be better choices. Regardless of the breed, with both cats and dogs, maintaining a regular grooming routine, including brushing, trimming, and bathing, can also help decrease the amount of dander in the fur, on the skin, or in the air, helping pet allergy sufferers to perhaps breathe a little easier. So, now that you know there are no 100% hypoallergenic pets, you might want to know this. Are you allergic? You might be wondering, how can I find out if I'm allergic to a pet before I own one? Here's what Animal Planet says. Making the decision to become a pet parent puts you in the same boat as nearly 60% of all households in the United States, according to the American Veterinary Association. But what if you're one of the many people who struggle with pet allergies too? Even if you haven't had a reaction in the past, the Asthma and Allergy Foundation of America, or AAFA, reports that allergies, including those to pets, can creep up later in life. And discovering that this condition exists after you've already brought home your new friend is certainly less than ideal. There are, however, some things you can do to find out whether you're allergic to pets before you actually get one. Try the following steps before you dive headfirst into the world of pet ownership. First, test the waters. Consider whether you already have any other type of allergies, since people who do are more prone to developing others. Either way, it's a good idea to set up a trial run by spending some time in the home of a friend or family member who already has a pet. Make sure, however, that the pet you're spending time with is similar to the type you want to get, since according to the AAFA, it's entirely possible to be allergic to dogs but not to cats, or vice versa. You could even ask whether you can borrow the animal for a sleepover in your own home to see how you react to a 24-hour period of exposure and if you have any problems with dander that's left around your house. If no one in your immediate circle of contacts has a pet similar to the one you want, another option would be to call your local animal shelter and ask if you can volunteer, perhaps during an adoption fair, and get some pet exposure that way. Allergic reactions to pets can either happen immediately if your allergy is strong or take a bit longer to manifest if it's less severe. So give it at least a few days before you jump to any conclusions. Symptoms include sneezing, watery or itchy eyes, hives, coughing, wheezing, and difficulty breathing, or even an asthma attack, which tends to be more common with cat allergies. If you notice any of these signs, chances are your body is reacting to the presence of allergens. Small proteins, which come from cats or dogs' saliva, urine, or skin secretions, then dry on their skin and shed off as dander. Ask the experts. The best way to confirm that you have a pet allergy is by making an appointment with an allergist who can help pinpoint your symptoms, exact trigger, and make a professional diagnosis. The doctor will take in your medical history and then usually conduct one of several tests, such as a skin, blood, or allergen-specific antibody test. If the test comes back positive, your allergist may advise against pet ownership entirely. Of course, many people in this situation throw caution to the wind and get a pet anyway. For those whose allergies are on the mild side, this can prove to be manageable, especially if you follow some best practices such as keeping some areas of your home pet-free and cleaning your house on a regular basis to get rid of pet dander. There are also a number of treatments available, including nose sprays and oral medications that contain antihistamines, which can provide additional relief. However, for those with more extreme symptoms, it's best to follow doctor's orders or seek out pets that don't create dander, such as exotic fish or birds. These options may not seem as cute or cuddly as a dog or cat, but then again, they could be much easier on your health. A lovable quality in itself. From the BBC by Robin Wiley. Your cat can pick up on how you are feeling. Our feline friends aren't quite as emotionally distant as we might think. They seem to be able to sense our moods. If you have spent much time on the internet, you'll know at least one thing. Our species loves cats. How they feel about us is much less clear. Compared to our devoted dogs, cats seem pretty unconcerned with human affairs. But it looks like our feline companions may pay more attention than we give them credit for. They seem to be able to tell when we are happy. New research has found the first strong evidence that cats are sensitive to human emotional gestures. Mariah Galvin and Jennifer Vonk of Oakland University in Rochester, Michigan, studied 12 cats and their owners. They found that the animals behaved differently when their owner was smiling compared to when they were frowning. Cats can read human facial expressions, and they learn this ability over time. When faced with a smiling owner, the cats were significantly more likely to perform positive behaviors, such as purring, rubbing, or sitting on the owner's lap. They also seemed to want to spend more time close to their owner when they were smiling than when the owner was frowning. The findings are published in the journal Animal Cognition. The pattern was completely different when the 12 cats were presented with strangers instead of their owners. In this setup, they showed the same amount of positive behavior regardless of whether the person was smiling or frowning. The results suggest two things. Cats can read human facial expressions, and they learn this ability over time. We have known for a while that dogs are good at recognizing human facial expressions, but this is the first convincing evidence that cats have the same capacity. Before this, only one other study has been done on the ability of cats to perceive human emotional expressions. Published in January 2015, it found ambiguous results. Galvin and Vonk's findings suggest that cats are more in tune with human emotions than we thought. That does not mean they feel empathy. It's more likely the cats had learned to associate their owner's smiles with rewards. People are more likely to spoil a cat when they are in a good mood. Still, even if cats do not truly understand our moods, the study still suggests that they can pick up on surprisingly nuanced human gestures. It also suggests something more basic. They are interested in us. People care about whether cats really do understand and pay attention to their owners, says Vonk. Our work shows that they may not be as indifferent as people accuse them of being. Domestic cats first appeared around 10,000 years ago. It may have taken so long to discover cats' emotional intelligence because their responses are rather subtle, as well as obviously positive actions like purring and rubbing. Galvin and Vonk noticed that the cats adopted certain body positions and ear and tail movements that are associated with contentedness. In contrast, scientists have known for several years that dogs respond differently to happy and angry faces. That is at least partly because their responses are more obvious. A 2011 study showed that dogs will actively avoid someone who appears angry rather than just changing their body language. The difference between dogs' and cats' responses to human emotions could be rooted in prehistory. Dogs have been domesticated for a long time. A 2015 genetic study suggested that the process began over 30,000 years ago. In contrast, domestic cats first appeared around 10,000 years ago, probably in the Middle East. Dogs' stronger responses to our emotional gestures could have arisen simply because they have had longer to adapt to life with humans. But for now, it is too early to draw conclusions. While there's been plenty of research into dogs' minds, there have been remarkably few studies of how cats respond to human gestures. They may be our most popular pet, but we still have a lot to learn about them. We do not even know why they purr. But this study might go some way to repairing cats' reputation for being uncaring. It may be that they simply do not show their affection for us as much as dogs do. From Adventure Cats, how to create a cat-friendly garden. Design a backyard that both you and your feline friend will enjoy. People plant gardens to attract bees, birds, and butterflies. Maybe your cat would appreciate the same treatment. Some plants are toxic to cats, including azaleas, chrysanthemums, daffodils, hydrangeas, iris, ivy, lantana, marigolds, and tiger lilies. The SPC, ASPCA has a full list of toxic plants on their website at aspca.org. But there are many plants and garden features that aren't harmful and that cats can enjoy eating, rolling around in, or lounging in. Leonard Perry, horticulture professor at the University of Vermont, says most cats will respond with pleasure to catnip, or Nepeta cataria, which can be grown in sunny areas with well-drained soil. Another plant that will often induce the same response in cats is catmint, or Mucinii, Nepeta Mucinii, a compact plant that also can be grown in a sunny location. Perry also recommends cat thyme, a member of the mint family, grown in sunny locations that some cats prefer over catnip. He also likes valerian officinalis, a traditional insomnia cure or sedative for humans that is a stimulant for cats. Grasses grown from oats, wheat, berries, barley grass seeds, and other grain grasses will give your cats something to nibble on. Many cats also like to munch on spider plants. A grass patch can even be grown on an apartment balcony in an old cat litter box or other container, according to cat gardener Christine D. Merchant. If you're not taking your cats out in the garden on a harness, D. Merchant suggests containing your cat with a tall fence or creating an enclosure or outdoor cat kennel with mesh material, which is also known as a catio. Cat gardeners also suggest including a water source, which could be a fountain or a pond. Perry says if you want to have fish in the pond, you can install a net just under the water surface to keep your cat from getting at them. Likewise, if you want to let your cat do some bird watching by having a bird feeder, make sure that it's high enough to prevent your cat from becoming a bird hunter. A patch of dirt, sand, or mulch to roll around in or dig in may also be an appreciated part of a cat garden. Perry says you can put wire mesh under the mulch or compost if you want to discourage the cat from using that area as a litter box. You can create hiding spots with a small teepee of boards or a segment of plastic culvert buried partially in the soil. The shade provided by the shelters like these are especially important if you have a pale or white cat that's more susceptible to sunburn. Lookout perches can be created with a cat tree or platforms built into fences. These are also great to encourage scratching and keep your trees safe. Stumps or pieces of wood of varying heights can also be safe places for cats to climb and survey their surroundings. After all, cats love to climb, but scaling a tree or other tall object while on a leash isn't safe. Also, cats might want to hide in long grasses. Perry suggests sowing new crops every few days to replace the ones that are chewed on. And remember to set up your cat garden away from the more ornamental parts of your yard because the plants might take a beating from your cats. Safety precautions for backyard adventures. Avoid pesticides in your cat garden or weed and feed products that have herbicides. Even organic ones may harm cats if they get it on themselves and lick it off. Store chemicals out of reach. Bring the cats inside when you're mowing the lawn. Power lawnmowers can propel rocks or sticks that could hit a nearby pet. And of course, always keep your cat on a leash unless he or she is safely inside a catio. Also from Animal Planet, sharing your bed with a small dog. England's Queen Victoria shared her deathbed with a Pomeranian. Russia's Tsar Peter the Great slept with his Italian greyhound. Throughout history, people have been curling up with their canines at night. And why not? It's so obviously tempting. What with teacup poodles making such fine bed heaters and dachshunds acting as perfect head warmers, stretching across your hairline from ear to ear. But if you spill the beans about your sleeping arrangements, even in the pet-friendliest of circles, you'll hear lots of advice to the contrary. Most of it will stem from widespread notions about dog behavior, including the idea that your sweet companion will transform into a bed-stealing Cujo the moment you begin letting her snooze with you. The ideas are that sleeping with the same level, on the same level as your dog, will give her equal authority and free rein to rule the roost. And that if you politely adjust your sleeping position to accommodate your dog, you're acting as her subordinate. If you've asserted yourself as the alpha of your family pack, you probably don't need to worry. But the moment you see an air snap or hear a guttural growl, get that dog out from under the covers. Whether she's feeling aggressive or anxious, those behaviors could mean you're at risk of a bite, and it may be time to consult with a professional dog groomer. Such potentially dangerous behavior should be addressed before you invite her to join the slumber party. Take an honest inventory of your own sleep habits, too. If you turn into a grumpy mess without 8 hours of uninterrupted sleep, don't try adding a dog to the mix. Although your pal will sleep about 14 out of every 24 hours, it won't be in long stretches. She'll get up during the night and, unable to leap her little body off your human-height bed, will whine for your help, probably more than once. Another word of caution, if you like fur bedding, for free bedding or the ability to randomly roll over in your sleep without worrying about whether you'll squish your pet, think twice about co-sleeping. The same goes if you have a partner who's uncertain about sharing the covers with your dog. However, if your relationship with your pet includes healthy boundaries and mutual respect, feel free to cuddle the night away. And that will do it for this week. I'm your host, Mary DeFranco. I hope you enjoyed the program. Thank you for listening, and please join me next time. And don't forget, please spay and neuter your pets. It's healthy for them and the environment. Pets Plus Us is a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. I'm your host, Mary DeFranco. If you'd like more information about this program or to hear this program again, visit our website at wxxi.org/reachout. I'd also like to invite you to share your pet story with us by writing to us at reachout@wxxi.org.